CBSI and the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He is in Moscow, where the snow has already flown. However, he's returning from Sochi. I'm told to call it a Black Sea resort, but it's so much more because these last days, it's been the focus of meetings that I think are called the Valdez Club or the Valdez Gathering. It's a form of Davos meets, a Super Bowl, but it's a Super Bowl for people who think, and it was capped by an address by the president of Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin. Anatole and I were not able to speak earlier because it was time just when I wanted to talk to Anatole. So I welcome him now, having survived the trip to Moscow and the Moscow traffic, which I'm told is intense, and the snowfall. Anatole, a very good evening to you. The Valdez Conference Club gathering and the address by Mr. Putin, was it spirited? Is it in the midst of recovery? Because there is unhappy news about the virus in Moscow right now. Good evening to you.
Hello, John. The health security around Putin was absolutely intense. We were all tested four times and kept at a very, very long distance from him. Apparently, this is insisted on by his staff. I'm told that that's the key reason why he isn't going to Glasgow, because the thing is, as you know, a leading Russian said to me, this entire political system depends on one man. You know, everybody in the system is terrified of him getting sick or dying. So they're very anxious to keep him safe.
That makes total sense. Now to his address. The way it's presented in the news is that he's taking a position that Russia is restoring its conservative values, and that is in sharp contrast with, I'm presuming this is speaking to values that are celebrated in the London media and the New York media and the French media. But I'm reading from the filter of English language covering the conference and the address. You have the Russian. So how would you characterize Mr. Putin's remarks this year?
Well, I mean, that part of them, I thought of writing, but that wouldn't please either him or the Republican Party. That part of Putin's speech was Putin's bid for the Republican nomination for president of the U.S. in 2024. Because, you know, I mean, all these attacks on woke culture are absolutely par for the course for conservatives in the West as well. So I think it's quite interesting there, you know, not so much in America, where they've given up on the Republican Party, but the Russians are keeping, you know, a very close eye on what's happening in France, for example, the rise of the conservative right there. And, you know, Putin still, you know, despite all the clashes and problems, does think of himself as a conservative European statesman. So this was his bid for an international conservative position. But of course, I mean, it was bitterly anti-liberal.
Are social concerns, social themes and values, are they a priority in modern Moscow, modern Russia, or is that our language being imposed on them?
I think to a great extent it is, you know, the attempt, not just of Putin, but of the Russian elites, you know, to carve out a different Russian position. I mean, that said, ordinary Russians, I like it, but it must be said, I mean, like ordinary East Europeans as well, are on balance more conservative than people in the West. But of course, that only makes them like many Republican voters in the US. They're not alien. I mean, there are some much, much wilder, thinkers in Russia who have pretty crazed ideas about Russia's spiritual path. One of them turned up to the Valdai. But I don't think Putin is one of them. He's much too pragmatic and cold-blooded for that.
Let's go to geopolitics then. First, Afghanistan. Mr. Putin had remarks about Afghanistan approving of the U.S. decision to withdraw from Afghanistan. Is Afghanistan an opportunity for Russia? It fought a very dire war in Afghanistan that is often credited with the deterioration of the Soviet Union. What is Mr. Putin's thinking today?
Well, I mean, the Russians are very glad that America is out of there because they really didn't like having, you know, Russian, American bases near their southern borders. But I don't think they see Afghanistan as an opportunity now. They see it much more as a potential threat. But, you know, the Taliban were in Moscow the day before, and the Russians seem fairly confident that, you know, together with the Chinese, the Pakistanis and perhaps the Iranians, they can, you know, keep the Taliban under control. The only thing is that, of course, the Russians, I think, would quite like to support the Taliban now financially. I mean, in return for the Taliban doing what they want. But of course, Russia doesn't have the money. So Russia has to hope that America will go on funding Afghanistan, and also must hope to persuade China to fund Afghanistan. I should say, by the way, that one interesting thing at the Valda, I was talking to an Iranian who was there, who was extremely hostile to the Taliban and very upset that they had won, and very angry that apparently they had broken, you know, promises to Iran of forming a more inclusive government.
Let's get to Europe right away. There's a gas crisis in Europe. The president of the European Commission, as well as Angela Merkel, the retiring chancellor of Germany, as well as the prime minister of the United Kingdom, I could go on. Everyone is alarmed, and there was a meeting in Brussels these last hours where there was no resolution, especially because some members of the European Union, I'm thinking of Poland in particular, asking for changes in the ambition for Glasgow, COP26, and climate change. So, first, the Russian part. Natural gas is the method of energy chosen in the European Union. Russia's position is unclear. Sometimes I think it has to do with Nord Stream 2. Did Mr. Putin mention any conditions or any decisions made about supplying additional natural gas or changing the approach to the shortages in Europe?
Russian, you know, messages on that have been very mixed and contradictory. And no, Putin didn't promise anything more. I mean, Putin defended himself and Russia against the charge of having deliberately cut off the gas. He pointed out, as the Russians often have, that, you know, Russia consistently offered long-term contracts, which would basically have nailed down the gas for the foreseeable future. And Europe, hoping to strike a better bargain, went for spot buying, and of course has got very badly burned in the process. I haven't found, I must say though, many analysts who haven't believed that at the same time, you know, Russia is using this, it could provide more. But partly, you know, I think Russia is making more money now selling it on wider markets. But also undoubtedly they're trying to make absolutely sure that Nord Stream goes through. The Russians, by the way, are also really congratulating themselves, as Putin did, on their nuclear industry, something, of course, that became rather embarrassing for a number of years after Chernobyl. But now they say, look, it's thanks to our, you know, above all our nuclear energy that we, you know, our electricity emissions are actually considerably lower than many European countries, including Germany.
Ukraine, which you have written at length about, Ukraine being the problem that has to be solved in order to follow along with comity between Russia and the capitals of Europe. Was there any mention by Mr. Putin of Ukraine? Is there any thinking that there's a fresh direction with the new German chancellor or with this energy crisis?
Well, I mean, Putin sent, you know, generally his comments about the West and America were rather calm and conciliatory, but he did issue a pretty stern warning against arming Ukraine.
Right.
And of course, he condemned the Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's statement about NATO membership for Georgia and Ukraine. I mean, Putin wrote a very tough article in the summer warning the Ukrainians against, you know, taking up permanently anti-Russian positions and threatening unspecified consequences. Not from Putin himself, but from Russians I talked to, there are basically two attitudes. I mean, on the one hand, they think that time is on their side, that Ukraine is declining. But they also think that this could lead potentially to another crisis in Ukraine.
Anatole Levin, the Quincy Institute in Moscow. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.